Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and for many years I did live radio. Then I transitioned to the podcast world where I feel I found my home. I love talking about spiritual formation, justice issues, and spiritual practices. Throw in the Enneagram, movies, and current events from time to time, and that's what you get on the podcast. I'm glad you've come along for the ride. Welcome to Faith Conversations. Faith Conversations, everyone. I am delighted to have with me someone who you're going to really enjoy getting to know, Barbara Mahaney. And today we're going to talk with her about a couple of books she's written, but maybe even more importantly, we're going to talk to her somewhat about her story as she became a writer. And honestly, she's someone that you may have read if you're from Chicago, where I lived for many, many years, or received copies of the Chicago Tribune syndicated column. I'm sure you might have read Barbara Mahaney, as she certainly was on the front page of the Chicago Tribune for a number of years, and told her stories of her family's life. And we'll ask her a little bit more about that. But then also transitioned into being a speaker, retreat leader, writing teacher, all of those things. She still is in the Chicago area and author of several books. I'm going to take a look at Mother Prayer, Lessons in Loving, as well as The Stillness of Winter. And I think about even that title, The Stillness of Winter, we may be in the Northern Hemisphere coming through winter and coming out the other side. But I know I've got some friends listening in Australia because I hear from you regularly. And so you may really be wanting to grab a copy of In the Stillness of Winter because of your season of the year. So all that to say, welcome to Faith Conversations, Barbara Mahaney.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, it's a delight to be talking with you. And I'm always interested to talk to writers, especially. I will say I'm a wannabe writer. I mean, I've got 5 books in print. 2 of them are mine alone. Others are collaborative, but I'm a talker and a reluctant writer, but you are truly a writer. I look at you and I go, Barbara's a real writer. What do you say to that when someone even calls you that? Do you go, they have no idea how hard writing is, or they have no idea about how insecure I am, or do you just love writing and you feel so solid in that?
Well, so there's always a long and winding story. You talk, I talk. I'm Irish, I talk, okay? So the long and winding story is that before I was a writer, I was a pediatric oncology nurse, actually. And I was one of those kids. So I grew up in a house with a dad who worked for a big Chicago ad agency, and he was Irish, and words were everything. And there were like great ads ripped out of magazines and put on the refrigerator with magnets. And witticisms were just part of the dinner table conversation. So I grew up loving words, and I grew up loving to write. And I was like I was a letter writer. I would write these incredibly long, I would write notes to all my friends. And every Christmas I would write this long love letter to my family. I went into nursing because I loved taking care of people. I love the attention. I just loved everything about nursing. What happened was, my dad died suddenly of a heart attack when he was 52. And at my dad's funeral, which was, the church was packed with people because he was this young guy who everybody loved and who just dropped dead. They read at the funeral mass the letter I had written to my dad just the previous Christmas, 2 months before he died. And after the funeral, the head of my dad's ad agency took me to lunch 2 weeks later, took me to lunch and said, "Kid, you can write. Have you ever thought about journalism?" And I was like, "Journalism? What? Get paid to write? Like, writing is just what I love." So I walked home from this lunch at the Hyatt Regency Chicago, picked up the phone. I was still a nurse at Children's Memorial in Chicago, picked up the phone, called Northwestern and said, hey, I'm a nurse. Is there any room in your graduate journalism program? You know, blah, blah, blah. I ended up getting into the program. While I was at the program, I started writing pieces for the Tribune. I got hired as a summer intern. And the next thing I knew, I was writing and I was terrified. That summer, I will never forget how, like, the butterflies in my stomach were just like the wildest, giantest butterflies ever seen on the planet Earth. And I just kind of threw myself into this crazy city desk, you know, the city of Chicago.
Wow.
My very first story, the first day I went to the Tribune, it was tragically sad, but there was this couple, it was kind of a Romeo and Juliet thing. This couple who weren't supposed to be dating, they jumped off the top of the Lincoln Belmont YMCA.
Whoa.
And so I got dispatched to go write this story. And because I had just left Children's Memorial a couple of weeks before, I walked in this hospital and I just marched up to the intensive care unit and I started talking to the one who survived. The other one had died.
Wow.
And I went back to the city desk and I told my editor that, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, how'd you get that? And I said, well, I went to the intensive care unit. And he's like, what? So anyway, I became a writer sort of backwards through the side door, and I love writing. I love telling other people's stories. And it took me a really long time to get the courage to tell my own stories.
Oh, isn't that interesting? That's fascinating. I'm in my head, I'm reacting to so much that you just said. I am married to a Murphy, Mike Murphy, an Irishman who is witty and witty with words and a wordsmith, and puts out a column every Friday on Facebook called Friday Rumblings, spiritual and political, kind of a combo. And so I'm so relating to that Irish bit that you talked about. But also, let me go back and ask about the writing piece. Were you a journaler? Were you always writing in a journal for yourself, or writing to create, more like these letters that you talked about and things like that?
I didn't keep a journal when I was, you know, I wasn't one of those girls who had a diary under lock and key. I, you know, in high school, I was always writing notes to people. When I was really little, I wrote and illustrated a series of books. I think it was The Adventures of Joe Ho was a really creative name there. And I remember lying on my bedroom floor on my braided rug between the two twin beds with, you know, my piles and piles of paper and my colored pencils and my regular pencils. And I wrote these, you know, The Adventures of Joe Ho, written and illustrated by Barbie Mahaney, I'm sure, because that's what they called me back then. But then it was just, you know, it was, I have always written with the primary goal of, I put my heart and my soul into the words, and it is my extension to whomever I'm writing. It's my, you know, my instrument of peace, my instrument of love, my instrument of empathy. I offer you, I give you my heart and my soul. And that's my primary reason for writing. That's what I use words for.
I love that. I'm thinking about my own history. You're making me think about this, that I grew up in a family of letter writers. Grandmother and mother, and I became a letter writer, and in some ways kind of bemoan the fact that email came along, though it is very convenient.
Yeah.
At the very beginning of the pandemic, I grabbed my contacts list from my phone, and I just thought, I'm going to start writing letters to people. And I wrote my way through my my contacts list, with the exception of a couple of people who I thought, oh no, I just have way too much to say to them. And I put it off, and finally emailed them.
Wow.
But I wrote so many letters on the front end of the pandemic, and it just felt like the thing I was supposed to do. And
beautiful.
Loved communicating that way. And of course, then the pandemic kind of kept going on. And
yeah. 500,000 letters later.
Well, what I loved about it, I heard back via letter from a number of people that I'd written. And of course, that just warmed my heart. I just now heard back from a dear friend who walked with me through a divorce many, many years ago and was a real lifeline. And she said, every week I seemed to have an excuse or I would get busy. She said, so finally, my letter is in the mail to you. And I was so glad that she just, you know, held on and said, I'm going to write. I'm not just going to email.
That's so interesting because I can think of two friends, one who told almost the same story. She said she was writing paper letters to everyone in her contact list. So that's really interesting. I mean, it's so interesting the many, many, many ways we all just sort of intuitively reached for something to take us through the pandemic. And it's so interesting that you reached for letter writing as, you know, a really beautiful form of human contact when contact was beyond our reach.
Well, and I also realize about myself, I've never been a good journaler. I need someone.
Yeah.
And for me, a letter, the person is on the other end of the letter and that becomes, I can journal to a person.
Yes. So
I'm great with all that. Well, let's move a little bit forward. You know, you were doing this completely other job, you know, working as in pediatric oncology as a pediatric oncology nurse, and you moved to writing, which I'm so thankful you shared the story there because we would be scratching our heads wondering how that happened.
Yeah.
But somewhere in there, you married and had children, and did you continue writing all during that time frame? Were you still writing at the Tribune or were you writing books or what was the story there?
No. So I was at the Tribune for 30 years.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, 30 years. That was a long, long time and loved it. I ended up marrying my beautiful husband, Blair Kamen, was. It's now past tense because he just left the Tribune too, but he was the Tribune's Pulitzer Prize winning architecture critic for, he was the architecture critic for 30 years and he was at the Tribune for 33. I think I have those years right. Anyway, so and we can talk about that because I was the lifelong Catholic who married the nice Jewish boy who was in the newsroom. So we're a Jewish Catholic family and we're both journalists. We have two boys whom we call our double bylines.
Great, our double
bylines. Our only double byline. Well, we have one other double byline besides our living, breathing children. When the new Prentice Women's Hospital was, they tore down the old Prentice and they built a new one. And as the architecture critic, Blair was always, first of all, he was fighting to save the old, beautiful, really avant-garde Prentice Women's Hospital, but they lost that battle and they tore it down and then they built this new one. And when he went to critique it, he invited me to come along because he said, since after all, I had birthed two children there, he thought maybe I had a little something to say about Prentice Women's Hospital. So we have three double bylines. Two are human beings and one is on paper.
Oh, I love that. And also this is so interesting to me. My husband has been, as long as he lived in Chicago. So I think we were both there about 32 years. And even beyond when we moved to Sarasota, he was still reading daily the Chicago Tribune. I didn't really tell him who I was going to be doing this podcast with. So after the fact, I'll tell him and he'll go, oh yeah, I read her for years. Oh yeah, I saw his bylines all the time. So this will be really interesting. Plus right now we're watching the beautiful series on Netflix about extraordinary homes where architects are interviewed as well as the people who chose the architect and for what purpose, all that. So this is so interesting. And none of us have any experience except neither my husband nor I, but we look at things and go, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
How does this come out of an architect's mind? It's amazing to me. So that's really interesting about your husband. Well, so you were still writing. Obviously, you had your kids and you were still writing when they were at home, when they were young.
Exactly. So when, shortly after I had Will, Will is now 27. And I was a writer for the Tempo section of the Tribune at the time, which was like the daily feature section. I had this fabulous editor. And after Willie, he was then called Willie, now he's Will. We all drop the IEs on our names around here. After Will was born, he was like 6 months old and it was time for me to come back from maternity leave. And he was just one of those babies. And admittedly, I was probably one of those mothers who was playing into it, but he wouldn't take a bottle. He just would not take a bottle. So I was hysterical. Like, how am I going to leave the house if he won't take a bottle? So I called my wonderful editor, Jimmy Warren. And I said, Jimmy, this baby won't take a bottle. I don't know how I'm going to come back to the office. And he said, Mahaney, I don't care if you work for Mars, just turn in good stuff. So from the get-go, I was working from home, like 100 years before there were pandemics and newsrooms were folded. I was working from home.
Wow.
So all those years of mothering, you know, my mothering and my writing were just, you know, one and the same. I mean, there were work days and I was writing during the work days, but, you know, I'd haul my kids along for some stories, for interviews. The way, just to fast forward a little bit, so I was a feature writer. I was on the news side for 5 years, and then I was a feature writer for about 25 years. And one of my editors at the Tribune had assigned me to this really fascinating series called Family Passages. And as a reporter, I was embedding myself in families who were going through like just incredible life changes. A woman who had just been widowed with four children, a couple having their first baby, a family becoming, you know, a couple becoming empty nesters. So I traveled with them to Georgetown as they dropped their last kid off for college. And then, you know, just kind of documented all that. My own mother's battle with breast cancer. So I spent like a few years, you know, doing these stories, these intensive stories of just paying like really close attention to what was unfolding in people's homes and unearthing those kind of universal questions.
Yes.
And after a while, I started thinking, well, you know, here I am trotting all over the countryside, you know, writing other people's stories, but these quiet, quotidian little stories that unfold at my own kitchen sink and my own children's bedside, they've got the same stuff going on. So I proposed to my editors, they weren't super interested, and I, sort of like you, just started a podcast. When your radio show went away, you just started a podcast. Well, I just started blogging. I called it Pull Up a Chair. And the idea was that it was like a virtual kitchen table. And I started it 14 and a half years ago now. I can't believe it. And for the first year, I wrote every single weekday. Then I started writing 3 times a week. I still write religiously every Friday morning. And the stories that I was telling were, you know, stories from the home front, those just quiet little tales that hold so much.
Oh, I love that. So let me ask this question. So on your website, are all those blog entries archived?
Oh, everything's there. Yeah. Pullupachair.org.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have any websites or anything we talk about, I'll put them in the show notes. Okay. So that people can get access if you're out jogging or whatever you're doing, listening to this. You can go back and find it there. So, oh, that's fascinating. I didn't know that you know, did that. You just thought, I'm just going to start this way before blogging was a thing or anyone was paying attention.
Exactly. It was like, blogging? What?
Well, and my thought, even as you were embedded in some of those families that were going through some difficult things or life-altering or seasonal shifts, the reality is the majority of our time is spent in the ordinary,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's really important to document the ordinary and to pay attention to actually how extraordinary the ordinary actually is, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's what you did and do still in that sense. I'm just sitting here thinking, wow, I would love to go back and read your entries throughout this COVID year. I'm kind of wondering if you talked about that at all or something.
Oh yeah. The COVID diaries. Yeah. I didn't always, but you know, sometimes it was just, I've always tried to keep Pull Up a Chair free from politics. I'm super politically engaged in terms of, you know, I was in a newsroom for a long time. I have like, you know, ink in my blood.
Yes.
So I care a lot about what's happening politically and on a national level, but I wanted Pulpit Chair to be sort of a sacred space where people, possibly of very different political perspectives, could find a safe place where the politics wasn't going to be on the table most of the time, and we could truly find that shared humanity. So, on Pulpit Chair, I certainly paid attention to just sort of the whole psychodynamics. Yes. And the spiritual dynamics. Yes. Of the pandemic. So I would write about it. I bring the outside world to the table through those lenses, through a spiritual lens, through an emotional lens. So yes, that filtered in. But what you were saying about the extraordinary and the ordinary, that's exactly the heart of my writing focus. And I just find it so, I consider myself, it's just such a blessing to be a writer, because being a writer, being the kind of writer that I am, I've often talked about, it's this spiritual practice of paying attention. Yes. And as a writer, and because I knew I had this space that I was going to fill, you know, for a year every day, eventually once a week, I think I learned to pay an extra kind of attention. Mm-hmm. To the everydayness of my life. Yeah. to you know, plumb the depths, to find those questions that hold. Yeah. You know, people say, well, how do you figure out what to write about? And I said, you know what, it's like I've developed this barometer. And, you know, I just kind of scan the landscape of my life, and there's a certain voltage that just like goes off. Mm-hmm. On certain issues or questions. You know, if I'm just moved to tears or moved to staying awake all night worrying about something, it probably means there's something there to dig into. And so that's what I do. So I dig into it. And I mean, it's the truth. Like, we're all living the most ordinary lives, 99.9% of us. But in those ordinary lives is such majesty and magnificence and heartbreak and anguish. And
yes,
we're everyday, you know, I just believe in everyday saints. I really do. Yes.
Oh, I like that. Well, and you're singing my song. I'm a spiritual director. And so it's all about paying attention.
Yeah.
But we're not taught. We're not necessarily taught that. And I've said before, you know, we don't live in a reflective culture. We live in much more of a reactive one.
Absolutely. Oh.
So we have to learn what it looks like to pay attention, to notice. Mm-hmm. And then to reflect. Mm-hmm. On things, as opposed to react. So I love that whole piece that you just talked about. I want to go back, thinking about your boys, who are now how old and how old?
Oh. Can it be true that one is 19 and one is 27?
Yeah, I've got a 28-year-old who's married. And
oh, I don't have that yet.
It's coming. But so it can be true, and it's so interesting. But what I want to go back to is kind of maybe the marriage of your writing into raising children. Because I think any writer, any good writer, mm-hmm. is a big reader. Mm-hmm. They're fed in many ways from mm-hmm. what we take in, you know, visually, yes, but also mm-hmm. Reading good books. And so talk a little bit about the importance of reading to you, and then how important it was bringing reading into the lives of your then little boys, who are, 8 years apart?
8 years apart. Yep. We thought we would never have another one.
Okay.
There were many, 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 many heartbreaks.
I can only imagine.
Before and in between. And I was almost 45 when that little guy was born, the wow. second one. The doctors had said, you'll never have another one. And lo and behold, there was another one. Oh my goodness. Anyway, you know, what I've always I've always, I, you know, like I said, I mean, I grew up in a house of words. My dad was this ad man and this Irish wit. My mom, who, you know, her heritage was German. She loved poetry and she loved literature. And, you know, I've written about, she would wake me up in the morning reciting poetry. And it just was like in the air. And so I've always loved words and I've always loved children's literature. And when I was at the Tribune, I often would interview children's authors and illustrators and people who from the world of children's literature. So, you know, the first baby shower anyone ever had for me when I was pregnant the first time was, you know, a children's literature shower. So the bookshelves were filled before the babies were born.
Well, and back before it was in vogue to have a children's book or literature shower. I guess so.
I didn't even know it was in vogue now because yes, I'm so
years
proud of it.
Later that became a real thing. So you're ahead of the curve.
So, you know, I mean, there were just like books from the day we came home from the hospital. There are pictures of us, you know, holding picture books in front of our children. And, you know, I was always engaged in conversation with my children, which is probably how, you know, the older one is rather scholarly. He's hilarious. And our favorite story on him was he was like 2 or 3 years old and he looked up at me and said, "Mommy, what is facetious?" And I was like, okay, there we go, in a nutshell. And then through my job at the Tribune, I was always interviewing authors. Here's a great little tiny story. I remember Willie must have been like 3 or 4. I don't remember what year it was. It was in the late 90s. My editor in the Tempo section said, "Mahaney, there's this writer in England whose book is like number one on the children's list and on the adult list. You know, would you take a look at this book and would you like talk to her and do a little profile?" And I was like, "Okay, sure. What's the book?"
I know.
"The Philosopher's Stone. What's that?"
Yeah, I was like,
"J.K. Rowling." Yeah. So I interviewed J.K. Rowling. We were both like working moms. She had a little kid running around in the background. I had a little kid running around in the background. It took us like 2 or 3 days to finish the interview because we were both moms getting interrupted by our kids. So words and authors, and they were all part of, they were always part of just infusing who I was and who I was as a mother. As I said, you know, my writing life was just so interwoven with my mothering life. And you know, I would interview these brilliant writers about all kinds of subjects. And I would always take home what I learned from reading their books and spending time with them. So it, you know, it's hard to tease out. You know, I spend so much of my time reading for work that reading for pure joy didn't happen a lot in those years.
I totally resonate with that. Just doing a daily radio show, it was always prepping for the interview and reading a portion of a book because you could never read the whole book because you didn't have that much time and all that. But I was just thinking about you talking about your son, you know, kind of running around in the house, playing at your feet while you're doing your job. And don't you think that's such a good learning for them and seeing, I just think of my son seeing me engaged in, you know, productive work and meaningful work.
Right. Well, again, sorry, but another favorite family story is I had in our old house, the you came in the house, it was an old Victorian, but you entered at the ground floor and the guys we bought the house from had made that the office. So we set up a little pretend play office next to my office. And Willie was like, not even 2. And we had, you know, once upon a time, there had been like a rotary phone in the house and I just didn't want to like throw it out once I gave it up. So he played with it. Yes. And I remember the time, oh Lord, it broke my heart. He was playing and he picked up his phone and he had his phone at his ear. And I asked him a question and he said, "I can't talk to you. I'm talking to my editor."
Oh,
And I thought, oh my God, how many times has he heard me say that? So yeah, he learned that my editor was some person who was getting in the way of him and whatever he wanted from me. But no. I mean, truly, like growing up, how blessed are they? They grew up in a house where we were always talking about interesting stories. We'd always just met interesting people.
Yes.
We were paying attention to the news. We were paying attention to the world. So it was kind of, I think it was a pretty fun house to grow up.
Oh, I love that story. It just warms my heart because this year, my son has been, I think 3 years now, the educational coordinator for the National Museum of Civil War Medicine. He went into the history field. He's a Civil War scholar.
Wow.
So the pandemic hits and they have the idea to start going online with live presentations, either interviewing an author in the field or creating and presenting a PowerPoint presentation. And my son, John, just recently told me, Mom, I just love it. I'll finish a conversation with an author and, you know, you hit stop record. And then the author has said to me, wow, you're really good at this. You're a good interviewer. And he says, I think about you every time. It's just so sweet.
Oh, I love that.
You know, grew up in this world. It's interesting the way our children grow up and what they take with them, what they take in, what they take with them as they move into their own field, right?
Yeah.
Now I have to ask, and I don't know, maybe this is a stretch or maybe it's right on the tip of your tongue. I don't know. Favorite childhood book back when you were reading to your kids. I see your, it's like hands down, you know, immediately. Let's hear it.
Oh, favorite to read to my kids or my favorite?
Well, both. Let's have both.
Oh gosh. Well, okay.
What came to you first? Was it your, what was your favorite?
Tasha, I had a beautiful, beautiful book of Tasha Tudor's book of Grimm's fairy tales that Tasha Tudor, the illustrator, illustrated, which is so beautiful. And she was the one who ignited every nook and cranny of my imagination. E.B. White, oh my God. I remember, you know, sitting on my kids' beds.
Go
ahead.
I was born and lived in E.B. White's town in Brooklyn, Maine. Oh, right down the street from E.B. White. His street dead-ended into the ocean, and I was around the corner. Oh, I just want to say that.
Wow. Bozo the Clown lived down the street from me. So you've got E.B. White, I've got Bozo the Clown. Oh, wow. Oh my God. I mean, reading, you know, like there's nothing more heavenly than sitting there reading pages from some, you know, great work of children's literature with, you know, the tears pouring down your face, the snot pouring down because you're crying so hard. And you look over and you see your kid is crying too. Your little boy is crying too. And Charlotte's Web and Stuart Little. And oh my God, those books I loved so much.
I love it.
I love those. And then there's this great series of books from Scandinavia called the Elsa Beskow books. They're again, they're just gorgeously, gorgeously, gorgeously illustrated. And I had this wonderful little toy and bookshop that just miraculously opened in my neighborhood when Willie was little. And the shopkeeper was from the Waldorf tradition of early childhood ed. And so it was just a little gem of a teeny tiny shop, and everything in there was so carefully curated, and it so informed my mothering with, you know, I'm really removed from the digital world, from the Disney world, from, you know, I was kind of trying to raise a little elf in the woods or something under the mushroom caps. That was the perfect world for me.
I love it.
Yes.
And so reading is important to you. Guaranteed reading became important to them because that was important to you. I'm guessing that they're both readers. And
the older one is, you know, the older one is now a lawyer. He graduated last year from, in the pandemic, he graduated from law school and is clerking for a judge right now. And not sure what he's going to do yet, but he is, you know, he reads like, 1,000-page tomes, like, you know, nobody's business. We keep having to build bookshelves in this house. It's like there's, and I think we'll never be able to move because who wants to box up the books? So,
well, that was the biggest challenge of our move from Chicago to Sarasota, books.
I'm sure.
And a lot came with us, a lot.
Yeah, I can't get rid of a book. And then you open the book and there's like some little crazy note that you tucked in once upon a time. And it just takes you back to the day that you wrote that note. And
totally.
Yeah.
Listen, we've been all around the world and have not said a word about mother prayer and the stillness of winter. I have to tell you this. I'm opening Christmas gifts this past Christmas. And my son is an old soul, thoughtful kind of a guy. I'm opening this and I'm in the process of opening. He goes, now, I don't know. I think you'll like this. You know, I looked and I thought, this seems to have you written all over it, Mom. What do you think? I open it and guess what it is? It is The Stillness of Winter, Sacred Blessings of the Season by Barbara Mahaney.
Oh,
and he saw that and he goes, that's just for you, Mom.
Now that you've told me about this son who works at the Civil War Medicine Museum, who knew there was such a thing, I love your son, John. I don't know him, but I already love him. And that he, because we know that he's a considerate soul, that he put thought to it, that he, whether he literally picked it up or virtually picked it up and looked at it, and that really touches my heart.
I needed to tell you that story. I thought you would really appreciate it. One of the reasons I wanted to talk with you, we're maybe a month out, something like that, from Mother's Day. And honestly, either one of these books would be a fantastic gift for any mom. Say a word about mother prayer. I think, number one, I think, you know, the subtitle is Lessons in Loving. And what you write about is beautiful, but the message of mother prayer goes beyond. How do we just interact with and love anyone, let alone our children and, you know, etc. But say a word about mother prayer and also the stillness of winter, because by golly, Christmas is also coming eventually again.
Mother prayer will always be the book of my heart. My first book was Slowing Time, which was, you know, beautifully received by the world. And after Slowing Time, you know, my publisher was talking about, you know, what I would do next. And I had this collection of essays that I really, really loved about mothering. And, you know, everyone's like, nobody wants to read a book about mothering. No. So I was like, okay. And I came up with another big idea. But then a really, really dear friend of mine died in September of 2015. And the week after, and she was the mother of two children, one in high school and one had just left, was a freshman in college at Brown University. Wow. And I thought of Ceci, who I loved so, so much. And I knew that the one thing, the hardest thing for her about knowing she was about to die was leaving those two children.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, it was the week after the funeral. And I thought to myself, you know what? Gosh darn it. I don't care if the world doesn't want to read mothering essays. I really want these pressed between pages. I want to leave these words for my boys. Someday they'll open that book and they will read how deeply they were loved. Mm-hmm. And so bless my publisher who agreed that they would be happy to publish those essays. And so then I had to sit down and think, okay, well, what are these really about? What is the essential curriculum here? And it just immediately came to mind. There is no, in loving children, in loving these children you have like literally brought into the world, birthed into the world, I am so forever in their front lines and in the trenches with them. You know, the 27-year-old is having a huge job interview right now, and I have been praying all day. Wow. You know, if the greatest commandment is love as you shall be loved, the crucible for that lesson is with our children. because for many of us, there is literally nothing I will not do for my children. You know, the older one had a terrible, terrible bike accident when he was 13. He broke his neck. They thought he was going to, for the longest hour and a quarter of my life, they thought he was going to be quadriplegic.
Wow.
And when you spend an hour and a quarter circling and circling and circling the emergency room cubicle, you know, saying every prayer under the sun, I mean, there's just love as you would be loved is lived out in the mothering of our children, in the lying awake all night, worrying about them, in the, you know, I'm not a person who ever wants to ruffle anyone's feathers, but you know, there were times in my both boys growing up where people were mean and awful to them, and someone had to step in and be brave and call it for what it was and come to the defense of and ruffle feathers. And so, you know what? I hated ruffling feathers, but if I had to ruffle a feather for my kids, I was going to ruffle a feather. So
that's why we're called mother hens, right?
Exactly. Oh, that's great. Yeah. So that's what, you know, Mother Prayer is a collection of those essays, and it goes through the whole spectrum of, you know, from the heartbreak of, you know, infertilities and miscarriages and stillbirths to, you know, the heartache of, you know, letting your children go, like sending them off to college halfway across the country and knowing you're not going to see them for 6 months or now a year and a half.
Yes, right.
Pandemic. So, you know, it was a labor of complete love. And I'm so grateful that those are that book exists. And
nice. Well, I think it would be a beautiful gift to any mom. And I mean that, you know, we're talking mom, grandma, any mother of young kids.
Generation of mothering. And I make the point too, that you don't have to have birthed a child or even adopted a child to be a mothering. I talk about the verb mothering. To me, it's a verb more than a noun. The emphasis for me is on the verb form of it. And we all have motherers in our life. They're not even necessarily women. I mean, they're just like people who mother us. And so it's a celebration of the art of mothering, and to mother is to love as we would be loved.
I love that. Beautiful. Well, what a delight to talk with you today. We've been here, there, and everywhere in the conversation, but I hope we are encouraging reading and writing to whatever degree, even as we talked about it here today. Barbara Mahaney, thank you so much for being with me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And thank your dear, dear John for introducing us.
I will. And as always, to everyone else, I say, keep the conversation going.